About Solomon's third year, he makes a marriage alliance with Egypt by marrying Pharaoh's daughter. The Pharaoh pays Solomon a dowry by capturing and burning the Canaanite city of Gezer and pillaging all the land. Solomon will later rebuild that city. Solomon brings her to live with him while he builds his palace and the temple. And at that time, all the people are still sacrificing on the high places because there is no temple. Even Solomon is sacrificing on the high places. He is following all the statutes of the laws, except he has not built the Lord's house yet. One day, he is sacrificing in Gibeon, and the Lord comes to him in a dream that night. In his dream in Gibeon, the Lord asks Solomon to make a wish, and he will give it to him. Solomon is overwhelmed by his lack of ability, and he asks the Lord for an understanding heart to discern between good and evil with the people. The Lord is pleased with his request, and he grants it to him. He also tells Solomon that if he will continue to walk rightly, he will prolong his life. When Solomon awakes, he heads to the Ark of the Covenant. He presents a burnt offering and a peace offering, and he gives a feast for his servants. Soon Solomon has the opportunity to discern good and evil when two harlots stand before him. They both had babies 3 days apart. One dies, and when the other woman goes to nurse her baby, it is the dead baby instead of hers. They argue over the living baby, each claiming that it is their own. Solomon tells the officer to cut the baby in half and give each a part. The true mother quickly gives up and tells the king to give the baby to the other woman. Solomon tells the court to give the baby to that woman because she reacted the way a true mother would react. The Israelites, under Solomon's watch care, are as numerous as the sands of the seashore. To manage all the people, Solomon puts a tremendous organization in place, and he delegates authority to each man to accomplish the job that he has been given. Each of the men are close to Solomon, and they are well respected and trusted by the king. Azariah is the high priest. Jehoshaphat is the recorder. Zadok and Abathar are priests. Zabud, the son of Nathan, is the king's very best friend. Adoniram is over all the forced labor. Elihoreph and Ahijah are the secretaries. Benaniah is over all the armies. Azariah is over all the deputies, and Ashiar is over all of Solomon's household. Here are the names of the deputies: Ben-Hur, Ben-Decker, Ben-Hesed, Ben-Abinadad, Abinadad the son of Edo, Ahamaz, Baana the son of Hushai, Jehoshaphat the son of Paru, Baana the son of Helud, Ben-Geber, Shimei the son of Elah, and Geber the son of Uri. These men watch carefully over all the tribal areas of Ephraim and Naphtali and Issachar and Asher, all the way from the top of Israel's borders to its bottom. Now, feeding those in Solomon's organization is a feat in itself. The requirements for one day includes 30 cores of flour, 60 cores of meal, 10 fattened oxen, 20 pastured-fed oxen, 100 sheep, besides the deer, the gazelle, the roebucks, and all the poultry. Now Solomon controls all the land from the Euphrates River to the border of Egypt, and from the Mediterranean Sea to the nations east of the Jordan River. Israel lives in peace and safety all its years from Dan to Beersheba. He has 40,000 stalls filled with horses for his chariots, as well as 12,000 horsemen. Each of his 12 deputies must provide a month of provisions for all of Solomon's house, as well as barley and straw for the horses. Solomon is considered the wisest man in the world. He develops 3,000 proverbs to handle every situation that comes before him. They are recorded in the book of Proverbs. And men come from all over the earth to listen to him. He also wrote 1,005 songs. In Solomon's Proverbs, he states the mind of God in common, ordinary, and everyday situations. The topics include personal conduct, personal sexual relationships, business, wealth, charity, ambition, discipline, debt, child rearing, character, alcohol, politics, revenge, and godliness. Hiram, the king of Tyre, was a very close friend of David, and he becomes a very good friend of Solomon. Hiram provides all the cedar and cypress for Solomon's palace and the temple. In return, Solomon provides Hiram with 20,000 cores of wheat and 20 cores of oil for his household for food. To bring the wood from Lebanon, Solomon forces 30,000 men to work the project. The men are divided into three groups of 10,000 men who work 1 month, and then they rest at home for 2 months. Solomon forces 70,000 men to transport the wood and 80,000 men to cut stones out of the mountain. He has 3,300 chief deputies in charge of the project. No Israelite is forced to work. Only the Canaanites who live in the land are the forced labor. In Solomon's fourth year as king, the foundation of the temple is begun, 480 years after Israel leaves Egypt to the very day. It will take 7 years and 6 months to finish the temple. Solomon brings Hiram from Tyre to design and make all the special bronze, brass, and iron parts for the design. His father, Hiram's father, is a Canaanite, but his mother is a Jew from the tribe of Naphtali, and his work is beautiful. The Lord had allowed David to make the plans for the temple, and here are those plans. The outer dimensions of the temple were 90 feet by 30 feet by 45 feet high. The front porch was 30 feet long and 15 feet wide. The windows were very narrow. Now there were annex rooms. Three stories on both sides of the outer walls had annex rooms, and the rooms rested on beams set on the blocks that were not inserted into the walls of the temple. On the lower floor, the rooms were 7.5 feet wide by 7.5 feet high. On the second floor, they were 9 feet wide by 7.5 feet high. And on the third floor, they were 10.5 feet wide by 7.5 feet tall. Stones. The stones were all pre-finished at the quarry so that the entire structure is built without the sound of a hammer, an axe, or any other tool at the building site. The stairs were winding, going up to the second and third floor on both sides. The coverings of the walls to the ceilings, everything including beams and pillars, were all covered with cedar. The wall panels were carved with rosebuds and open flowers. The floors were made of cypress boards. The Holy of Holies was 30 feet long, 30 feet wide, and 30 feet high. The floors and the ceilings were in pure gold. The walls were covered with angels and palm trees and open flowers and covered with gold also. Solomon made a cedar altar and covered it with gold. Gold chains were there to protect the entrance of that most holy place. Two statues of guardian angels were made from olive wood. They were 15 feet tall. Their outer wings spread across the room and they touched tip to tip. Two inner wings touched the center of each other at the center of the room. Each wing was 7.5 feet long, and they were all covered with gold. In the front room, the floors and the ceilings were also covered with pure gold, as well as the walls that had carvings of angels and palm trees and open flowers. The door to the Holy of Holies was five-sided, opening with two olive wood doors carved with guardian angels, palm trees, open flowers, and all overlaid with gold. The entrance door to the temple had square doorposts made of olive wood. There were two folding doors of cypress wood, each hinged to fold back upon itself. They were also carved with angels, palm trees, open flowers, and all overlaid with gold. The inner court. There were three layers of huge stone and one layer of cedar beams in that inner court. The temple was begun in May of Solomon's fourth year as king, and it was completed in November of his 11th year. It takes Solomon 13 years to build his palace. It is much larger than the temple and much more expensive. He builds a beautiful house there also for his wife, the Pharaoh's daughter. When the temple is completed, Solomon brings all the gold and silver and the utensils into the temple treasury. He gathers all the elders of the tribes and brings the Ark of the Covenant from Mount Zion to Mount Moriah, where the temple is. When the Ark enters its resting place, a cloud fills the entire temple just as it did during the days of the wilderness journey. It is the glory of the Lord. With the glory of the Lord in the house, Solomon addresses the people with a prayer of dedication. He then gives a benediction and he sacrifices 22,000 oxen and 120,000 sheep. The feast of dedication lasts 14 days, and then all the people return to their homes rejoicing. After the dedication of the temple, God speaks personally to Solomon. He warns him that his presence in the temple will only remain as long as Israel is faithful to him. If they worship other gods, he will leave the temple and Israel will become a byword to the nations. In Solomon's 20th year, the temple and the palace are finished, and he gives Hiram a gift for his part in the construction. His gift is 20 cities in the land of Galilee. The Queen of Sheba hears of the wisdom of Solomon and decides to go to Israel to see for herself. She takes a large entourage with her, as well as a wealth of gifts for the king. She has many questions, and she intends to trip Solomon up, but she cannot. He answers all her questions, and then some, and she is amazed at what Solomon has built in the last 20 years. She concludes that she has not heard even half of the truth about Solomon. She gives him the gifts, and it is the largest bounty of spices ever given to Solomon or to Israel. After that, she prepares to return to Sheba, believing in Solomon's God. In the meantime, Hiram's ships have been bringing almug trees and gold from Ophir. The almug trees are used to build the supports for the houses and also to build the harps for the singers. Now, Solomon's wisdom was an incredible gift to the Queen of Sheba. But as she prepares to leave, he gives her gifts from his treasury, and she returns to her land fully blessed because of Solomon. 666 talents of gold come to Solomon that year. He builds his own throne from ivory, and he overlays it with gold. There are 6 steps to the throne, with a gold lion on each side of each step. Everything is gold because silver is not worth much in those days. Every third year, Hiram's ships brings more gold, more silver, more ivory, apes, and peacocks. Solomon is greater than all the kings of the earth, and every man brings him more gifts of silver, gold, spices, weapons, garments, horses, mules, and these all come every year. Solomon bought chariots and horses from Egypt, and he exported them to the Hittites and to the people of Aram. He has 1,400 chariots of his own and 12,000 horsemen. Silver became as common as the stones in that day. Women are Solomon's downfall, and he sins against God because of them. Besides the daughter of Pharaoh, he takes wives from the Moabites, the Ammonites, the Edomites, the Sidonites, and the Hittites, all the nations from which the Lord specifically told the Jews to stay away from and not to take wives. Solomon takes wives. And Solomon loves them all. Ultimately, he will have 700 wives and 300 concubines. And ultimately, they turn his heart from God, and he begins to worship the Asherah. He builds worship places for the idols for his wives. The Lord speaks to Solomon, telling him he will tear the kingdom away from him and give it to his servants. But he will not do it during Solomon's life because of his love for David. But he will tear it apart after his death. When Solomon has 60 queens and 80 concubines as wives in his harem, he writes a story about a woman who will not let him have her. Solomon's record of that story is called the Song of Songs. The song opens with Solomon's attempt to kiss the young Shulamite woman, but she will not let him. He has her in his palace where a banquet is set as well as a bed. But the young woman is sitting in the window watching for her beloved to return. Now Solomon is handsome. Her beloved is ruddy. Solomon speaks all sorts of leading and lustful words, trying to stir her sensual desires. But she can only think of the wonderful, beautiful, exalting words of her beloved that he spoke to her before he left. Solomon puts on a parade like one that he had when he married the Pharaoh's daughter, but that does not interest her. And in a dream, she hears of her beloved knocking at the door, and she remembers his words. The harem, called the Daughters of Jerusalem, tries to tempt the girl to give up and to be his wife like they have, but she will not. She does not want her love aroused until the right time with the right man. Solomon gives her a vineyard, and also a vineyard to her brothers, and they're supposed to help, but they don't. They go off and leave their vineyard to her, and she works in it until she becomes so scorched by the sun that she's almost black. One day, while she's working the vineyard, she hears that her beloved is on his way, coming over the hill. She sells the field, and she pays Solomon the debt that she owes, and also the debt of her brothers, and she waits patiently for her beloved to arrive. Now, she's not been swayed by Solomon's evil desires. She is pure and holy as she waits for her true love to return from his journey. Because of Solomon's unfaithfulness to the Lord, three adversaries have been prepared to taunt him. Hasad is an Edomite. His ancestors were killed by David and Joab in a raid on their land, and some of them escaped to Egypt, where one of them married the sister of Pharaoh's wife. Hasad grew up hating Israel, and he gathered a band of warriors and returned to Edom, where he taunts Solomon. Rizon has run from Hazadezer, the king of Zobah, and gathered a band of followers. When David killed the king of Zobah, he returned to Damascus, where he ruled over Aram, and he still rules there, and he hates Israel. Jeroboam is Solomon's chief over the forced laborers from Joseph's tribes. When Solomon begins to sin against the Lord, a divine message is given to Jeroboam by the prophet Ahijah. The kingdom will be torn apart, and you, Jeroboam, will become king over the 10 tribes. If you will worship God and keep his commandments, you will be blessed. When Solomon hears this word, he attempts to kill Jeroboam, but Jeroboam escapes to Egypt. Now Pharaoh Shishak accepts him, and he stays there until Solomon's death. Towards the end of Solomon's life, he reflects on those years of which he was away from the Lord, the years of which his wives had caused him to stray as he worshipped other gods and the Asherah and Molech. He sits down and he pens a book that tells about the way a man without God thinks, that there's a time for this and a time for that, and that God has placed eternity in the heart of man, and that eternity is nothing better than what a dog has. When a dog dies, it returns to the dust of the earth, and that's it. Solomon had thought that way in his early years, as he ruled on the throne and was led astray by his wives, that he should not have married at all. As Solomon comes to the end of the book, called the Ecclesiastes, he writes that you should not do those foolish things, and you should not waste your time as a youth foolishly. He sums up the book by saying things like this: a man who foolishly makes a vow or a promise must keep that promise even when he realizes his mistake. The love of money will not bring satisfaction, nor will a man's labor if it is without God. A good name is better than good oil. Anger resides in fools, and a bribe corrupts the heart. These are just a few of the things that Solomon said. Even a little foolishness of worldly thoughts and behavior will taint one's life as a dead fly spoils a vat of oil. In his conclusion, Solomon says the following things: divide your investments into 7 or even 8 places, for you don't know what tomorrow will bring. Do not be idle. If you follow the impulses of your heart when you are young, God will bring judgment upon you one day. Solomon says, turn to the Lord while you have the chance, for everything else is just emptiness. Many books are written that can be searched for wisdom, but the true words, which are similar to the well-driven nails, are given by one shepherd and one shepherd only. Fear God and keep His commandments, because He is the one who judges everything, deciding if it is good or evil.